Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, I'll have a conversation with someone in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. He is the co-founder of Leaf and Grain, and also, more importantly for our conversation, Murray's Pizza and Wine. Making his return to the show on his birthday, Dietz Hoffman, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Eric, thank you for the warm welcome. I'm doing great for having opened, you know, two restaurants in 6 days.
I want to talk about the state of Leaf and Grain, but obviously, you know, Murray's is new. So let's start with Murray's. I mean, you know, of all of the like next things you could have done after starting Leaf and Grain, how did you decide that pizza, like an adult pizzeria was the one thing you really wanted as your next project?
Yeah, well, we had started talking about pizza in 2018 and had started to get pretty serious about it. And then COVID hit, which was obviously brutal. But like looking back, it's kind of from a pizza standpoint, was kind of a blessing in disguise. I don't think Murray's would have succeeded if we had opened it in 2020, because in 2020, we were trying to add bread to our Leaf and Grain menu, but supply chains were pretty difficult, and we couldn't get like a bakery to work with us really, and so we had to start making our own whole wheat sourdough at Leaf and Grain, and so now we've been doing that for, you know, almost 6 years, and that's, you know, and the dough at Murray's, and I'm sure we'll get into this, but the dough at Murray's is naturally leavened. You know, it's a sourdough pizza, so you know, the hardest thing, if you ask anybody in pizza, the hardest thing in to do in pizza is get your dough right. And it's also, I mean, to manage it really. But it's also the most important thing. So that experience is really what gave us the confidence to do pizza. And then we had found this space that we really loved for Leaf and Grain in Memorial, the center we really wanted to get into, but it was 5,000 square feet, which is like twice as big as we needed for a Leaf and Grain. So we kind of looked at each other and said, you know, is this the jumping off point for pizza? And we did a big like whiteboarding session and ended up saying, you know, this might be a terrible idea, but let's do it. So,
as with almost any decision to open a restaurant, this might be a terrible decision, but let's do it anyway. Talk about kind of the concept though, because, you know, one of the things I've always noticed about my meals at Leaf and Grain is that it's pretty family friendly, and you'll see, you know, you've got like kid friendly dishes, and you'll see a lot of like parents and kids eating there. You went in a slightly different direction from Murray's, where it's a little more elevated and a little more grown up. Did you kind of come to that point at some point in the process where like we can go like the no-nos route and have like a super family friendly arcade games, like very traditional pizzeria kind of experience, or we can go in a kind of a more adult direction, maybe more like an Elro or a Coastline, where you can bring kids, but we're not going to specifically cater to them.
Yeah. It kind of evolved over time. And to be clear, like we welcome families, especially on the, we have a huge patio and a even bigger green space next to the patio. So that's a pretty active family zone. But the reason we kind of went this direction, a little bit more adult for a little more date night-y versus like family outing, was that as we started to develop the concept, we thought, okay, you know, just like Leaf and Grain, we want to have like the highest quality ingredients that we can possibly do. And that doesn't, like, you know, family, for a family outing, that's a little bit of a different occasion. And, you know, if you want to have like children, we just had our first kid, you know, I love kids, but like, they don't appreciate a sourdough pizza, right? They want, you know, that's not anymore.
Or so. Hamachi crudo, you know, right? Yeah, right. Some of the other things you're doing.
Right. And so this was a way, and then also just like this one, you know, Leaf and Grain, has been amazing, and that's like my baby, and I love Leaf and Grain. But this, you know, Murray's is really intended to be like a single location, community driven restaurant. And so like similarly, kids, do they care about local sourcing? Not really. So kind of like everything kind of like dovetailed and we ended up in that direction. And then the wine kind of overlays nicely with that. So.
Right. And I think you've made some decisions to kind of work with people. Like you've expanded the circle a little bit, right? Because you didn't, you haven't done beer, wine, or cocktails at Leaf and Grain. So, you needed to kind of broaden your, I mean, I'm sure you can drink wine and decide whether it tastes good or not, but you, in terms of getting the right mix of, vintages, you've expanded the team a little bit to have someone who can help you do that.
That's right. Yeah. So we've got, well, so stepping back, we've got Derek Brown, who's really handled all the bar stuff for us. He's, for those who don't know Derek, he's a great guy, first of all, but he's got a very decorated resume. I mean, he worked for Danielle Boulud, in a number of places in New York, and Danny Meyer, David Chang. I think most notably Dead Rabbit, which is the number one bar in the world. Most people might hear Dead Rabbit and think, why does that matter? That's probably the most important bullet on that resume. But so he just kind of
And then locally, he was at Riel for a long time.
oh yeah, of course, yeah.
People who are listening to this may know him from Riel and Blood Brothers and some of the other stuff that he's done locally.
Yeah, right. Of course, yeah. I took for granted that people would know that. But yeah, so he's been really kind of the force behind our bar, and he's just, gosh, I mean, he's so talented. It's been a joy to work with him. And then on the wines, we've that's really been driven by Edward, and then we have a sommelier as well, who you met, Plath. And I know enough about wine to probably just sound like an idiot on a podcast. So it's, that portion is really their realm. But we've landed on I think a really great and interesting list. We're featuring it's a lot of interesting natural wines. We're prioritizing small producers. We've got some, grower champagnes on there, Loire Valley Cab Franc, some high acid Italian whites. That are pretty special, and I think some serious rosés that are not like what you might think of as like a poolside rosé, or like a fruity fun drinker. Like these are pretty, structured. They've got some depth. So it's and then some oranges too, which is kind of my personal favorite, and Murray's as well, for what it's worth. So.
Right. We should say Murray is your wife.
Oh, yes.
We should say that at some point for people. How did she react when you told her, I'm going to name the restaurant after you? Or was she pushing for it, or was she skeptical?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We put together all these names and we couldn't figure out something that we really loved. And then I was like, what would you think about Murray's? And to use a euphemism, she said, yeah, like, okay, just don't screw it up. So yeah. I was like, okay,
Yeah.
that's good because restaurants always succeed. So no pressure there. But yeah, so she gave the approval with just the condition that I don't ruin her good name, so.
That's very generous of her. Yeah, I mean, there's a mixed track record of naming restaurants for relatives. Like Bernadine's was one of my favorites. It's Graham Laborde's grandmother, and of course it came and went. So, you're taking a little bit of a risk.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's like 90% of restaurants fail or something, so.
It's not that bad. I mean, if it's open for 10 years and then you don't renew the lease, like, did it fail or did it have a good run? You have to
Yeah, that's good.
sometimes you
Yeah.
have to balance these things. All right. Let's talk pizza, because this is the critical thing, right? Sourdough crust is unusual. Like, I was trying to think about whether anybody else in Houston that I can think of does it. I think maybe Cultivare does, but other than that, like, nothing immediately came to mind. So, obviously you had the familiarity with the sourdough from Leaf and Grain, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you had to make sourdough pizza. So as you were kind of testing recipes, like, how did you settle on sourdough as the right platform for Murray's?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of we wanted to have pizzas that were at least like in the healthier realm of pizza. And immediately, I think most people associate that with Neapolitan. I love Neapolitan. I mean, Neapolitan's great. But the issue with Neapolitan is it's, well, one, it doesn't really have any structure. It's you pick up a slice of Neapolitan, it's going to flop like just 90 degrees down. But then also, I think, the second any pizza comes out of the oven, it's on a slope downward in terms of quality. And Neapolitan is probably the worst, has on the steepest slope, if you will. And so we really wanted to offer a pizza that was light, airy, but had more backbone than a Neapolitan. And so that's, sourdough is kind of like the perfect fit for that. And then of course, it does overlay nicely with our experience there, but it was really more about the end product that we were trying to get to.
Right. Also, we should say, I think, that Houstonians in general are a little bit skeptical of Neapolitan. The track record of Neapolitan in this town is a mixed bag, to say the least.
That's yes, I would agree with that.
And it doesn't travel well. And I know that Murray's is kind of focused on a dine-in experience, but at the same time, you're a neighborhood pizzeria. You want people to be able to pick up a to-go order, I assume.
Yeah, for sure. And you're exactly right. I mean, probably in the world, over half of the pizzas that get eaten at home. So, we're definitely trying to be more dine in, but we knowing that a significant chunk of those of the pizzas sold are going to get eaten at home, we wanted to try and give something that's good at home as well. So,
You mentioned dough management, and that is one of the challenges of, a sourdough is it needs a certain amount of time to ferment, and it needs, you've got to be able to proof it and all that stuff. So you don't have to give away any like major secrets, but how are you kind of making it, and how are you managing that process?
Yeah, it's fun. It's kind of funny for something that's just basically, flour, water, salt, and in this case, primarily natural yeast. We got a very tiny, like less than 1% of yeast in there, and a tiny bit of honey to help activate. But for something that's so seemingly so simple, it's extremely difficult to do, and I mean, it's the hardest thing that we do across either of the two concepts. And I think it starts with we're using some really incredible grains. We've got some organic and heritage grains from Barton Springs Mill in Central Texas. It's really some of the best flour in the U.S. We start with just high quality ingredients, basically the highest that we could get. And conveniently, there's a great mill, like I said, in Texas. So that kind of checks the box for us of this kind of community and Texas-oriented approach. And then we take it. I will keep some things close to the vest, but we do a 72-hour ferment on that. It's like kind of a slow cold ferment. And then yeah, it's nice and bubbly, and we try to be delicate in how we shape the pizzas because you can do a great job fermenting pizza dough, but then if you just beat it to death as you're stretching it out, then you lose all the, it was for nothing basically. So, we've got, I think a unique approach in how we do that as well. And then the result has been, I think we're getting it pretty good and dialed in as far as the product outcome. And, it's a, at Leaf and Grain, I try to test everything that we, every ingredient that we sell. And I enjoy that. I think just, it's a little bit cathartic, but like pizza, it's not such a chore to have to try all the pizzas, every day.
Yeah, it's not like eating broccoli or I don't know, artichoke hearts or whatever. And then talk toppings. I mean, you guys have kept it pretty classic. I think it's interesting, right? You didn't get quite as aggressive as Tiny Champions did, where you put the Hawaiian on the menu and basically just dared people not to like, just made it so good that you dared people not to like it. But you're playing around with some stuff. Talk about toppings and kind of getting that balance of, okay, we have to have a pepperoni and we have to have a cheese, but we also want to have some personality. And these are the pizzas where we're gonna, show that off a little bit.
Yeah, I think we really tried to balance having some of the classics, you know, like a any pizza restaurant in the world, pretty much, unless they don't offer it, pepperoni is going to be their biggest seller. And we kicked around the idea of not having one on there, and eventually we just said we got to do it. And so, you know, the only thing we've done that's a little bit of a wrinkle there is just used a higher quality cup and char pepperoni that gives you that nice crispness on those outer edges. You know, then we've got some signatures. I think you mentioned the Not Hawaiian pizza, which is, everybody knows, you know, a Hawaiian, right? It's ham and pineapple. We took it's kind of our riff on that. So it's got salami picante, some pickled shallots, our cheese blend. I mean, we are like, you know, making our own proprietary cheese blend. But then instead of the pineapple, we've done a pineapple infused hot honey that gets drizzled over at tableside. So that's been popular and really one of my favorites on the menu. We've also got a solid sausage alla vodka pizza. That's great. I mean, it's a vodka sauce and Italian sausage, and then some herbed whipped ricotta. I mean, what we have tried to do is, you know, everything pretty much on our signatures menu, we're trying to have some ingredients that are kind of value add that have to get done and prepare like long in advance of the making of the pizza. So it's not just like we buy a bunch of toppings and put them on there. We're making a lot of the wild mushroom pizza, which has been maybe surprisingly the most popular pizza. You know, we're taking that and we're taking the mushrooms. It's wild mushrooms. We're taking them, we're cooking them in Sauvignon Blanc and a ton of butter, really. And
that explains why it's so popular.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then, you know, cooking that down until it runs brown a little bit, and then those are going on the pizza later on. And we've got a salsa verde, like an Italian salsa verde that we put on top of that. And then just sneak peek, I think we're trying to add a tenderloin add-on to that pizza, which we're kind of in the process of figuring out how we want to go about that. But anyway, there's some of the classic. We got a cheese, obviously. We got a pepperoni. We got a prosciutto and arugula. But then we got a few that are kind of more like our signatures. And I'm kind of interested to see how it evolves. But I'm really happy with how the menu's turned out, especially this early on.
Yeah, and then, you know, I think you've got a good mix of kind of shareable small plates that complement what you're doing with the pizza without, you know, overwhelming it or overshadowing it. Or, you know, I don't think that someone could come to Murray's and not eat the pizza, right? I think whatever kind of road you go down, you're going to wind up at pizza, but you can have the small plates or not and kind of round out the experience that way.
Yeah, with the small plates, we've tried to make them pretty elevated. And, you know, so you mentioned the hamachi and salmon crudo earlier. I think the two goals that we had for the small plates menu were obviously pizza. Even the healthiest pizza is rich and decadent. And so we tried with the small plates to either bring something to the menu that was fresh, bright, you know, had some good acidity that would complement pizza, or otherwise is protein forward. So like our meatball, which has been a hit, but the crudo checks both of those boxes. But you know, pizza is basically lacking in freshness and acidity. And also, like, you don't really think of pizza as being super protein heavy. And then we got the carpaccio on there as well, and a white bean hummus that's surprisingly been a super popular one. Not surprising because it's not good, but I would not have anticipated how commonly ordered it is.
Right. And then of course you're known for your salads, right? So you gotta step it up and have a good Caesar and a good kind of green salad to round things out.
Yeah. The Caesar, I love the Caesar. We really try on the salads. We wanted to make sure that they felt completely different from Leaf and Grain. And we have a Caesar at Leaf and Grain. And in the case of what we have at Murray's, everything about it is different. And we leaned towards, again, this kind of lighter, brighter, version of a Caesar dressing. As you know, sometimes Caesars can be super heavy and creamy. And this one's got a lot of, Meyer lemon juice in there, which gives some brightness. And then it comes with a tomato olive relish, which, you know, one of my partners was like, we should really try this. And I was like, I think if I had not tried it, I would have said, no, we're not doing that. Cause like when I read that on a menu, I think tomato caper relish with all.
Yeah, it's not really a Caesar at that point, right? Like it, like tomatoes don't go on a Caesar, like in a classic right. Caesar, you would never see a tomato.
Yeah, right. But he was like, well, let's try it. And so we tried it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is really, I pretty much was like, we shouldn't change anything about this, you know? And then the relish is on the side. So, people can opt out of it, and it's plated totally. I mean, just everything about it's different from how we do it at Leaf and Grain. So.
All right. So it sounds like you're getting pretty good feedback so far. I mean, you've only been at it for a couple of weeks. So how would you say it's going?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, we had I don't know if I told you this before, but we had a pretty rocky start. So 2 days before friends and family, I mentioned earlier, like we're doing a 72-hour ferment, right? Friends and family is on Tuesday, like this is 2 weeks ago, just on Tuesday. The Sunday before that, we came in and the AC was off and the kitchen was humid and 8 degrees higher than it should have been. And the dough failed, completely failed.
Right. Like, the dough, right. For people who don't like understand the mechanics of dough, like it would have just exploded, right? Like way beyond what is reasonable.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's super finicky. Like I said, just 8 degrees and like a little bit more humidity in the air and it just nuked the dough. And so then we're just staring down the barrel of a gun because like I said, it's a 72-hour ferment and we have 48 hours. So we had to like develop a new dough in a pinch and then also get this AC unit repaired. And that took a few days. It was like just this nightmare scenario. And then we finally kind of got our feet under us there enough to be, you know, we had something that was decent, you know, for friends and family dough wise, but not something that we were like, you know, right now I'm really proud of our dough. But I think at that point we were, like I said, we were just kind of our backs against the wall. And I'm just happy we got something done at all, frankly. And then, so anyway, we went through that week of soft opening and then we had grand opening, on Friday night. And like an hour before the grand opening, our sous chef had to leave and turned out he had COVID. So like, you know, it's just one of those, like, I never knew what Murphy's Law really meant until I started like a restaurant.
Yeah. Know?
It's like, well, okay, if the dough can fail, it's going to fail. If the sous chef can get COVID, he's going to get COVID. So then, you know, so then I'm like, okay, I guess I'm throwing on apron. I got to play sous chef for a couple of days, which is honestly a blessing in disguise. You know, I'm glad Chef Matt is back with us, but it just forced me to really get deep into the weeds of how we're operating back there. Cause I was trying, you know, we've got chefs. I never want to be that like restaurant owner who's like back in the back of house saying stuff that's wrong, you know, that's like an infamous role that I could be stepping into. And so I was really not trying not to step on their feet back there prior to Chef Matt getting sick. But then with him out, like I had to be back there. And so that was really helpful to just kind of understand where the pain points are from both the back house and front of house perspective and all that. And so anyway, so it was a bumpy start. I think, you know, in the end, I think it, both of those two kind of shortcomings, I think helped us have helped us in the medium and long term, or it will in the long term. But, yeah, so now we've kind of got our feet under us. I feel like operationally it's really humming. The products can be coming out a lot more consistent and yeah. And people like the wines. I mean, that's been fun. I think, just getting some people who like know wine saying like, wow, you know, this is like, I'm surprised you guys have this Chablis on here, you know? So it's, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, and I wanted to start restaurants since I was a kid. And so that really came to fruition, I guess, when I started Leaf and Grain, and I love Leaf and Grain again, but it's like, it's healthy, fast, casual. It's not as, when you're a kid, like you think about a restaurant like Murray's, you know, like, it's beautiful. The ambiance is cool. You know, you got pizzas and wine and it's like, it's a dream. This is like, as we were about to open, I kind of like just looked up into the dining room and I was like, you know, this is really like, this is my dream, you know, like it's, this is a special thing.
Right. Like you read Setting the Table at some point and you're like, oh, I want to be Danny Meyer. Like I want to be the king of the castle. I want to, you know, was it Black Rabbit? I think was that Netflix show that just kind of came and went about the goings on at a restaurant. And it's, you want that, you want to be the proprietor. You want to be the one that everybody knows and greeting people and working the room. And you can't really do that at, you know, when everybody's like lined up waiting for a salad, like it's just not that kind of restaurant, but full service bar program wine, like you can kind of be that like iconic restaurateur at a place like Murray's.
Yeah. And it's, well, and it's just, you know, I think like, this is probably not the right description for it, but like, I think we've had a little bit of a chip on our shoulder because like at Leaf and Grain, like what, you know, what we really try to do is have like very reliable, consistent, healthy food. And so I think, which is, I mean, Leaf and Grain is actually much harder than Murray's to operate. But like, I think we maybe have been misperceived to be like, you know, just like salad bro, you know, like, oh, anybody can cut a mushroom. Anybody can cut a cucumber and put it on a cold bar. And I think this was a chance for us to just show that we can do a little bit more and flex some of our culinary strengths and, you know, in a way that I think all of us have kind of been really wanting to be able to get out and do.
And then what's the feedback been like from the customers? Is there something that like, are people asking for like a veggie lovers or a meat lovers, or like, what are they excited about and what are they sort of asking you to add?
That's a good question. People have been really excited about the signature pizzas I mentioned. I think we do want to add a margarita pizza to the menu. We've gotten a lot of requests for that. You know, we tried to avoid that because it's just like yet another like fairway pizza option. So right now we're trying to figure out how we could just put even just a tiny wrinkle on that, you know, whether it's doing something with the tomatoes, like, you know, we could take it instead of like your traditional thickly cut Roma, we could do like a, we could cook down some cherry tomatoes or, even do a little bit of ferment on them. You know, I'd love to do something with like a tomato water involved. So we're trying to figure out what that looks like, but the feedback in general has been good. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a distinguished pizza from what else is out there in Houston, just in terms of its style. I'm not saying it's like particularly great, but just that's like stylistically that, I mean, although I do think it is great, but
no, you should be proud of what you're doing, but like, you know, you got to find that balance between like, I'm really proud of this versus, you know, we make the best pizza in Houston. I, you know, like give your, yeah, let's, right. Let's give it a month. Let's give it a month. Let somebody else say that before you say that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That you will definitely never hear that come out of my mouth, but nobody else is really doing sourdough in this. And if they are, they're not doing it in this style. I think it's probably the better way to say that. So yeah. So it's been, I think a lot of people have been surprised by it and it's a new experience for, I think, a lot of Houstonians.
And then, you know, you mentioned you kind of see it as a one-off, but do you have then the next concept in mind? Like, you know, like you've done a couple of sandwiches at Leaf and Grain, but you don't really, I don't think of it as a sandwich place. I mean, do you have like, do you know what's next? Are you already thinking about the next concept?
You know, it's, I think in general, like we aspire to be really good at the things we do. And then I've got the itch for a few things, but I think until we've got this like fully dialed to a place where like, you know, somebody might say like, this is exceptional pizza, I think we want to keep focusing on just the two concepts that we have. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I'd love to do, but probably on the more of like a medium term time frame.
Right. No, I will say the one thing about the Murray's Pizza, and Felice and I are going to talk about the experience of dining there next week. So I don't want to step on that conversation. But the one thing I will say is it held up really well the next day. And I don't know if that was a priority for you or not, but you know, for me, like that's very important because I almost always have pizza leftovers and I want them to be good out of the refrigerator the next day.
Yeah. I mean, we have, I'm glad you called that out because it wasn't something sexy enough for me to bring up proactively, but we've tried to be super thoughtful about that aspect of the pizza. So, you know, I mentioned earlier about how, like, yeah, it stands up to time better than Neapolitan does. But if you saw, I don't know if you noticed on the box, but we like put very detailed, reheat instructions on there. And, which by the way, people think it's like oven or air fryer. The best way to reheat your pizza, everybody, is a skillet. You should be skilleting it at, you know, for a couple minutes till you've won. Then you're going to add a little bit of water on
like,
there.
Like in a cast iron pan on a stove is what you're saying.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. Sorry. Yeah. Heat up a skillet, throw the pizza on there, let it get warm a little bit, add some water, put a little top on there. And then, you know, once the cheese is bubbling, you're good to go. And it's the best reheat you could possibly do.
Right. I ate it cold from the refrigerator. That not as you intended. I saw those very detailed instructions and I just ignored them completely and ate it cold out of the refrigerator. And it still, I thought, was pretty solid. You know, that it in some ways even like the texture of the dough was a little like I thought that the texture of the dough was like a little better in some ways cold, which is not easy to justify. And the flavors had a little more time to kind of settle in. So I won't say that it was better cold the next day because that would be stupid, but it held up really well. There were things about it that I noticed cold the next day that I didn't notice when I was eating it warm and fresh. So, you know, I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm not too surprised by that because when it comes right out of the oven, it's a lot of the things that make the sourdough special are lost just by like the heat of it. And like, I think when it has a chance to kind of firm up a little bit more and kind of come up to, or come down to room temp, it's like, I can definitely see what you're saying.
All right. And then, you know, it's been about a year since you were on last. You had just, you either had just opened or were about to open, your Briar Grove Tanglewood, location, Leaf and Grain. Since then, I know you've added another one downtown. And of course you added the newest location, right next to Murray's in the Memorial area. I should have this in front of me and I don't, but you have what, like six or seven of these now, right?
That, yeah. So the Memorial Leaf and Grain is the sixth and then Murray's is like the seventh restaurant.
So, I mean, at this point you've got, I mean, six Leaf and Grains, like how do you kind of feel about where you're at with that concept as you continue to kind of grow it across Houston?
I think we're trying to accelerate expansion. Our mantra from the beginning has been, we've been trying to build a 100-year company. And so we've been all about responsible growth, but I think we're at a point now where the model is pretty well dialed in. And importantly, I think we've never had a better team. And so like you take those two things and that gives you a little more confidence to step on the accelerator a little bit. I just sent back a lease edit on a Heights location actually, this morning. So hopefully stay tuned for that. We've got, but so yeah, we're looking, you know, we're trying to get, because, you know, I guess the other thing about growth, everybody kind of like thinks about growth as a big risk. And if you go too fast, like that's how most restaurants and companies go out of business. But there's also a little bit of a risk to not going fast enough because, like, you know, we're competing against multi-billion dollar national companies in this category. Like it's, you know, it's crazy the difference that having that level of scale does for across your cost structure. I mean, you know, if I think about one, I won't name names, but like if I think about one national competitor, they've got like a culinary team of like 25 people, you know, whereas like that's been like a fraction of one of us for almost 10 years, you know. It's like, so if you don't grow, you can't, in the long run, I think it's really difficult to compete in that category. Whereas like, you know, on the Murray's front, for instance, you can be a neighborhood place. And actually I think it benefits you in that category to be the neighborhood spot versus like the chainy equivalent. But like for Leaf and Grain, I think we, if you're not growing, you really are dying. Like, I think it's impossible to keep up with the pace of just the amount of resources that these national competitors have.
Well, and I think we saw a big kind of national salad restaurant like make a kind of an initial push into Houston, and then they've kind of slowed down a little bit. And so, there is an opportunity, I think, for you to kind of get into parts of the city before they do and establish a presence, and then maybe blunt that a little bit, right? That because I think ultimately, I think Houstonians want to support Houston restaurants, above and beyond some famous chain from out of town or whatever.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so we're going to try and get out there and block off some of these areas before they can get to it. Because I do agree. I mean, the one thing that's been wonderful since the beginning is just like the amount of support we've gotten from Houston and I'm from here originally, of course, and the I think more than, and you'll hear like certainly way more prominent culinary figures and chefs say this as well. I think the Houston culinary scene, both from a consumer standpoint, like customer standpoint, but also just like the community of chefs and industry folks, I think it's the most supportive culinary scene probably in the US. I mean, people are there for each other. We're always all supporting each other's spots. We're on text. Hey man, like, do you have an HVAC repair guy,
Exactly, right. Yeah.
So that, those it's been great. I think we're just very fortunate to have started in Houston and this kind of being our first region.
Right. I mean, Evelyn Garcia and Henry Liu were on this podcast last month as part of the Star Chefs episode, talking about, third place is like built on collaboration and community, and sort of joked with them like, "Oh, you mean it's not like this in New York City?" And they basically just laughed, right? Because of course it's not, right? Because it's so competitive and it's so cutthroat. And it's one of the things I appreciate the most about Houston is that, everybody wants everybody else to win, right? Like someone like Aaron Bluedorn, who comes in with like a pedigree and, money and all that stuff. Like people are just excited, like climb on, like let's keep this thing going, let's build it together. And towards that end, I mean, you've even fostered that leaf and grain with some of these collaborations. So, do you have more of those planned? Do you want to do, are there going to be like a pizza of the month or whatever, at Murray's or some opportunities there?
Yeah, I mean that's really my like most favorite thing that we've been able to do is some of these collabs. And in short, yeah, we're definitely going to do some chef collabs on pizza. It's actually kind of difficult to get people to sign up for like a salad collab. I mean, not surprisingly, it's just not that exciting. But I've floated the concept of pizza collabs to some of my peers, and then just like way more talented people than me, and people are like, oh, like hell yeah, that's yeah, like just name the date, so it's
Right. I mean, I saw Rafi Nasser with his family when I went to Murray's. It's like the Kraft Pita chicken shawarma pizza collab is right there. I mean, it's just, begging to happen.
yeah, I mean, I think that like coincidentally, I think that's a good example of like Houston support, like this community supporting each other. Rafi and I like are competitors, right? But like, Rafi's at Murray's. Rafi also eats leaf and grain. An hour ago, my wife was standing right here, and I had been out when she ordered lunch, and I came back, and she was opening up the lunch, and I looked over, and it's Kraft Pita. Like, and then I took, of course, texted Rafi, and I was like, Murray's fighting the good fight. So it's I think that's just a it really encapsulates the kind of what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and when I had Otto Othman on the podcast last week from Pinchot, and I think part of what intrigued them about Houston is that, like, as a city, we're kind of home to some really thoughtful fast casual or kind of counter-based concepts. I mean, you see Chop and Block get a Bib Gourmand in the Michelin Guide. Certainly everything Rafi's done with Kraft Pita, certainly what you guys are doing, Casa Emma. There's so many like people who are kind of rethinking the way that this is done, and at a time when dining is expensive, for a lot of people, like finding ways to deliver a good experience and keep things affordable. It's such a valuable part of the market, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's really the goal is just, you know, how do you make an impact with people in something that can otherwise be felt like it's just a commodity, you know? And it's, you know, it really comes down to your team, like the people that are in there making the food. I mean, I think we've got an incredible team and like, they're so great about somebody comes in. They're always given a warm welcome, you know, asking genuine questions, not just like, hey, I like your shirt at the tip button, you know? Yeah, it's a special thing. And it also just, I think because it is such it's a lower price point thing and kind of like a daily item, we just get to serve way more customers than the average restaurant, which is a nice, you know, which is something we get to talk about in the culture, like with our team. It's just like, hey, look, because of what we do, you have the opportunity to change like just a ton of people's lives, by way of how many people come through the doors. So it's a special, the impact stuff's like really real to me. I think like, just going through COVID and the like how tumultuous that was emotionally really drove home like how much I want this to be like an impact oriented company, I guess. So
absolutely. All right. Well, I am going to say that does kind of bring me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you would like to discuss?
I don't think so. Other than I neglected to mention that we have an incredible frozen Negroni and frozen, goodness gracious, I've forgotten what the other mojito. Sorry, at the Murray's restaurant. So,
yes, I've had that frozen Negroni, and it is appropriately bitter and boozy. It tastes like a Negroni, and I love a Negroni, so suits me fine.
Awesome, that's it. Yeah. So, thanks so much for having me, Eric. And if people want to follow us, we're at Murray's Pizza and Wine on Instagram and The Leaf and Grain on Instagram. Am I allowed to plug like that?
I was, I usually set people up for it, but yes, you beat me to it. So, Dietz Hoffman, thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.